Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I am Abubakar Diallo, coming to you from Bonn in Germany. Coming up, Germany is ready to take responsibility for colonial era crimes against the Herero and Nama people in today's Namibia.
Wir streben eine gemeinsame Regierungserklärung mit folgenden Elementen an.
We are aiming for a joint declaration by our two governments, which would consist of the following: agreement on a common vocabulary to describe the historical events that took place, a German apology, and the acceptance of this apology by Namibia.
And a magistrate court in Zimbabwe drops all charges against Pastor Evan Mawarire, the man behind the move to shut down the country. Our correspondent describes the mood in Harare after his release.
It was electric, and it seemed as if people were celebrating some independence or the return of a hero who had come back from exile.
Also in this edition, a former minister in Burundi, Hafsa Mosi, has been shot dead. Residents of her hometown says she is a major loss. Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Germany is planning to formally apologize to Namibia for the massacres it carried out against some of its people more than 100 years ago. German troops killed tens of thousands of members of the Herero and Nama ethnic groups between 1904 and 1908 in Southwest Africa, today's Namibia. Significantly, modern Germany is now making use of the term genocide to describe the slaughter. A spokeswoman for the German Foreign Ministry, Swanzan Chebli, said on Wednesday that the government has spoken of genocide for a long time.
It is not really a change of mind. If you have been following remarks by government spokesmen over recent weeks and months, you will have realized that we used the term genocide quite early. We referred to genocide explicitly.
Berlin ruled what was then called Southwest Africa as a colony from 1884 to 1915. Bilateral talks about a joint government declaration which referred to the massacres as genocide were due to be concluded before the end of the year, according to the Foreign Ministry.
Wir streben eine gemeinsame Regierungserklärung mit folgenden Elementen an.
We are aiming for a joint declaration by our two governments, which would consist of the following: agreement on a common vocabulary to describe the historical events that took place, a German apology, and the acceptance of this apology by Namibia.
Chebli added that the joint declaration with the Namibian government can serve as a basis for a parliamentary resolution. Berlin has repeatedly refused to pay reparations, saying that its hundreds of millions of euros in development aid since Namibia's independence from South Africa in 1990 were, in quote, for the benefit of all Namibians.
How we cope with the past, how we refer to it, has no effect on the issue of compensation. This is something we have said many times before.
This renewed debate is said to have been brought about tensions between Germany and Turkey, where German lawmakers in June passed a resolution recognizing the killing of ethnic Armenians by the Ottoman Empire as genocide. The Ottoman Empire was the predecessor of modern Turkey. Head of DW's Africa Service, Klaus Stecker, has written a commentary on the issue and it's now read by Mark Caldwell.
Genocide is genocide, isn't it? Last month, when discussing the massacre in 1915 of Armenians by Ottoman forces, German parliamentarians were quick to use the term. The resolution they passed condemning the killings was approved by a large majority. After all, it was only a matter of Turkey and the founding of the modern Turkish state. President Tayyip Erdogan was quick to fire off a broadside in retaliation. Germany, he said, was the last country that would have any right to pass judgment on genocide in Turkey. Germany should instead start to account for its own massacre of more than 100,000 members of the Herero ethnic group in southwest Africa. Unfortunately, Erdogan is quite right. The absence of an unequivocal declaration by Germany was, according to Parliamentary President Norbert Lammert, a bit embarrassing. Nonetheless, there has been a shift in German policy. The government no longer maintains, as it did for decades, that genocide can only apply to crimes committed after the UN Convention on Genocide entered into force in 1951. Some 12 years ago, in 2004, the then German Development Minister, Heidemarie Wieczorek-Seul, attended a memorial ceremony in the presence of thousands of Hereros and Nama. She described the massacre by German troops at the beginning of the last century as genocide, seen from today's perspective. She also indirectly apologised for the killings, much to the annoyance of the then German Foreign Minister, Joschka Fischer, who feared such remarks might expose Germany to claims for reparations. But times have changed. In 2012, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, then on the opposition benches, proposed that the German parliament adopt a resolution saying that the war waged in Namibia between 1904 and 1908 was both a war crime and genocide. Steinmeier is now Germany's foreign minister, and his resolution a crucial backdrop to the dialogue on reconciliation and compensation. Those talks are supposed to be concluded this year, by 2017 at the latest, and certainly before the general election in Germany that year. Both the German government and parliament should have had the opportunity to pronounce on the issue of colonial-era genocide and to offer an apology for which the Herero and Nama people have been waiting for a very long time. Despite the best of intentions, the question of reparations is highly complicated. There are no survivors who are still alive. Namibia is a multi-ethnic state, and it does not wish to see ethnic strife breaking out over reparations paid to individuals. Herero activists claim that their voice is not being heard and are threatening legal action in The Hague. There is no risk of dust settling on Germany's colonial-era crimes.
A commentary written by Klaus Stecker. And if you also have an opinion to that, you can send your answers to address which I'm going to read to you later in the program. This is Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
A Zimbabwean court on Wednesday dropped all charges against Pastor Evan Mawarire, who was charged with inciting public violence when he was arrested on Tuesday. Mawarire came to prominence with a social media campaign called #ThisFlag, in which he urged Zimbabweans to claim their flag by calling on President Robert Mugabe's government to manage the country's battered economy properly. TW's Privilege Moshani rejoins me now from Harare. Privilege, why were the charges dropped?
It was on a technicality, what they called procedural inconsistencies. First, the state preferred charges of inciting public violence, but when they got into court, they withdrew those charges and they were preferring subversion of the state, which amounts to treason. So according to the Zimbabwe Constitution, you can't do that to an accused person to, put up a new charge in court when you had not preferred those charges before.
So what does this mean now? Is he a free man, or will those charges be reintroduced again against him?
He is a free man unless the state decides to come up with, new charges like and then they re-arrest him. But for now, he's a free man. He's acquitted of all the charges that they had preferred against him.
So how was it like outside the court by his supporters of this flag protest movement?
It was electric. And it seemed as if people were celebrating some independence or the return of a hero who had come back from exile. You know, they maintained a vigil from morning until around 7 in the evening. After the news broke out that he had been freed, people broke into song, dance, you name it, and they were honking vehicles. and flying Zimbabwean flags. And even when he came, he couldn't, he struggled, you know, to walk. They, you know, raised him in the air, and, you know, before they even addressed the crowd, the people were pushing and shoving just to get a glimpse of him.
Is this movement, this flag movement, going to continue from what it looked like at the moment?
Yeah, it is going to continue, because even speaking after, you know, emerging from the court, he remained defiant. He said that they must keep the momentum, and they must not let the government, you know, shut down citizens in speaking against any injustices or anything that they feel that the government is not doing well in terms of policies.
Privilege Mushanyere in Harare. Hafsa Mosi, a lawmaker in the Burundian East African Legislative Assembly and a former minister, has died after being hit in the chest by bullets fired by two unidentified gunmen in the Burundian capital Bujumbura on Wednesday morning. Now, Apollinaire Nirora filed this report.
Lawmaker and former minister Hafsa Mosi had left home and was driving along Nyankoni Avenue in Bujumbura when her car was hit by another vehicle. Burundian police spokesman Pierre Nkurikiye said that when she went out of her car to see what had happened, two gunmen opened fire and shot her in the chest. She died later in the hospital. Hafsa Mosi was born in Makamba province. Local residents said her death was a disastrous loss. One Bujumbura resident who is from Makamba told DW that Hafsa Mosi was a good-hearted woman.
She was helping people like returners from Tanzania camps. She was also helping vulnerable people. During this Burundi crisis, she went in Rwanda and I heard that she was helping people who are refugees there in Rwanda. I don't see how those people helped by Hafsa Mosi, how they are going to survive.
Hafsa Mosi occupied several high posts in the Burundian government and at the Burundian president's office. She was a spokeswoman for Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza, then served as Burundi's Minister for Information and East African Community Affairs before joining the East African Legislative Assembly in June 2012 as a lawmaker for Burundi. She was a member of the Burundian ruling party and a former journalist for Burundi National Radio and the BBC. Journalist Juvenal Bigirimana remembers Hafsa Mosi as a fellow broadcaster.
As a legacy, I must state that she was a kind person who was in good terms with everybody. So to learn that she was killed, it shows that security matter is still a concern here in Burundi. I learned a lot from her because as a journalist, she was a good presenter.
Hafsa Mosi leaves behind three children and a husband. She was killed one day after the start of the second round of inter-Burundian talks in Arusha, Tanzania. The talks are being facilitated by Benjamin Mkapa, former president of Tanzania, and aim to solve the country's chronic and violent political crisis.
Apollinaire Yorora reporting. And it's now time to join the Learning by Air team. Enjoy.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Learning by Ear. This is the fifth episode of our radio drama called The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the previous episode, Farahani came up with the idea of sneaking into Europe on the boat belonging to Sule's father, who has been a fisherman all his life. Linda, on the other hand, is already in transit on her way to start university. She had a bit of a culture shock on arriving in Europe, and right now, with only a few minutes left to catch her flight, she's still trying to get to the departure gate. Will she make it in time? Let's find out in today's episode called Is My Skin My Sin? We'll join Linda first of all and pick up the story as she goes through the metal detector at the security control.
Hey, hey, go back again and empty whatever is in your pockets. Coins, rings, necklaces.
sir, please.
Final call for Miss Linda Maraga.
That's my name they're calling, Maraga. Please.
Then what are you waiting for? Go on, go.
God help me, please. Please, I can't miss my flight. I can't.
Linda rushes to her departure gate. Incredibly, her prayers have been answered. She gets there just in time. And as she sits down, guess who else she sees on the flight? It's Florence. What a relief. Linda can't wait to tell her new friend about her nightmare in the transit airport. But before we hear what Florence has to say about it, let's join Farahani and Sule at the harbour, where they're telling Sule's father, Hamad, about their plan.
There's really no need to worry, Mr. Hamad. When we land in Europe and start working there, we'll be able to buy you a better boat. The kind with an engine that you can even sleep inside when it rains. You know the ones that...
Sule, do you and your friend have no shame at all? That you come to me like this and ask me to give away our family's only source of livelihood? And for what? A dream of going to the white man's land? What is it that our young people think they see in Europe?
Farahani, I warned you this wouldn't work with my dad.
Stop talking when I'm talking. Have you forgotten your manners as well? Is this the kind of thing you learn from Europe? Now you listen to me and listen very carefully. I have been at sea since I was 12 years old. The sea is not a playground and my boat is not a toy. Get out of my sight, the pair of you.
But Mr. Hammond, maybe I didn't explain to you clearly the reason why...
Out! Get out before I lash your backs. Instead of looking for jobs and finding women to marry and have children, you're wasting your time and your youth just dreaming about Europe and building castles in the sea.
In the air. You got it wrong, Mr. Hammond. It's building castles in the air, not in the sea.
Farahani leaves Sule's father at the harbour. He feels not angry, but frustrated. Is this the end of his dreams of going to Europe? But let's turn now to Linda and Florence, who after a short flight have arrived at their final destination. Linda had to go through another thorough clearance process at immigration before being allowed to enter the country. But now Florence has invited her to sit and have a nice cup of tea.
Florence, I can't believe what I've just been through. This trip has been absolute hell. I never imagined it would be this way. People are so unfriendly, and they don't seem to trust me or even want to speak to me.
Welcome to the real Europe. You know, I had an African friend here who used to say, "My skin is my sin."
What does that mean?
That it's because of our skin color that we are treated like this. Of course, not everyone here is a racist. If they were, I wouldn't have married a European. Well, I'm so sorry you had such a bad experience on your very first day. But, you know, people here are more scared these days because of the risk of terrorism. And even if that weren't the case, they're not nearly as friendly as people are back home. You'll have to get used to that.
Flo, thank you so much for your advice. Look, I don't want to take advantage, but might it be possible for me to use your phone very quickly? I just need to send my parents a text and let them know I've arrived safely. I know they must be worried.
No problem. Go ahead and call them. I'm sure they'll be happy to hear your voice.
Thank you, Flo. You're so kind.
Hello?
Dad, it's me, Linda.
Ah, Linda. Oh, thank God. How are you?
I'm fine, Dad.
How was your journey? And whose number is this?
I'm calling from a friend's phone. The journey wasn't so easy. And the people here really aren't very friendly. But Europe looks beautiful.
Hello? Linda, I can't hear you clearly. Where are you calling me from?
Sorry, Dad, I have to go. But please tell Mom I got here safely. I miss you.
Hello?
Bye.
Hello? Linda, are you there?
Thank you, Flo. My parents must be relieved to know I got here safely.
Linda, let me give you a piece of advice. Never tell people back home that things are tough here or that you're having difficulties. No matter what you go through, don't ever tell them the truth.
Why ever not, Florence? These are my parents. They need to know what's happening in my life.
Just remember what I said. You'll work it out yourself soon enough. Oh, I have to go. My driver is here already. Here. Here's 20 euros to pay for the tea. You can keep the change, okay?
Thank you.
Now, remember, you have my telephone number, so if you ever need anything, just give me a call. It was great to meet you, Linda. Bye-bye and take care.
Bye-bye.
Linda watches Florence wheel her luggage towards the car park. And for the first time ever in her life, she feels scared. Scared and lonely. She looks around, hoping to see a familiar face, but all the faces here are foreign. She pays for the tea and goes to the airport train station, where she catches the train to her university. Let's leave Linda now as she embarks on her new life and find out what's been going on with Farahani back in North Africa. After Sule's father, Hamad, refused to lend him his boat, Farahani decided to join some other migrants who were trying to get to Europe in a small, overcrowded boat of their own. But this time, he kept his decision secret. He hasn't even told his best friend Sule about his plans. Now, after many days at sea, Farahani and the others have managed to get within a few miles of the European coast.
We are looking for the gas. Please remain calm. Do not jump into the water. Our officers will be escorting you from this point on.
Where are you taking us? We want to go to Europe. We know we are nearly there. We can even see the coast from here.
We intercepted this boat in African territorial waters, so we shall be returning you there safely as soon as we have identified exactly where you have come from.
We don't want to go back. We have no papers. We are stateless.
Well, we'll see about that. All I know right now is that you are trying to cross into Europe illegally. And our duty is to make sure that our borders remain secure. Please cooperate with these officers for your own safety.
Nah, I'm not going back. I'm not going back. You can't make me.
He's jumped off the boat. Quick, no, get him out. The waves are too strong. He's drowning. Have you got him? Is he all right? Okay. Now listen carefully. We don't want anyone to get hurt. So please, all of you, remain calm. Stay on the boat and all will be well.
So Farahani is rescued from the sea by the lifeguards and sent back to Africa against his will. But he still hasn't abandoned his dream. What will he do next? Keep listening and you'll find out. We've reached the end of the fifth episode of this radio drama series, The Promised Land, a story focusing on African migration to Europe. Tune in to the next episode to see how Linda tackles the challenges of studying in Europe. Meanwhile, do join us to discuss the issue of racism and intolerance on our Facebook page, facebook.com/dw.lbe. Goodbye for now.
And now elsewhere in the news, in South Sudan, a shaky ceasefire appeared to be holding on Wednesday. The United Nations, however, remains worried that more fighting could break out despite the ceasefire. Former rebel leader Vice President Riek Machar has withdrawn his troops to the outskirts of the capital, Juba. Machar's spokesman said the move is to respect the ceasefire agreement. The United States has, however, sent 47 soldiers to protect U.S. staff. Germany and other EU nations have begun evacuating their nationals to neighboring Uganda. And in Kenya, a suspected recruiter for Somalia's Al-Shabaab militant group being held in a West Kenya police station has shot dead at least four police officers there on Thursday after snatching weapons from a police guard. And that's all we had time for. For comments or suggestions, please send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or you can also send us a text message to +491609575950. Your number again is +491609575510. From me, Abubakar Jallo, and until tomorrow, bye now.